Hi, and thanks for watching this episode of Ecosystem TV. Today, I'm joined by Achim Granzen, Principal Advisor, Ecosystem. Achim, thanks very much for joining us today.
Welcome.
So, Achim, you've been in the tech industry for over 25 years, both as an analyst, as well as working for some of the world's largest and best-known technology providers. Can you give us a quick 30-second introduction about yourself and let us know where your passion lies in technology?
Okay, sure, Chris. I think my passion is really all about making technology-enabled transformations successful within an organization. It's not necessarily deep technology, but how does it actually bring benefits to organizations? Over the past 5 years, I've been doing this as a technology analyst, initially with Forrester and now with the Ecosystem. And what I love about this role is that I can really be a bridge, a mediator between the technology providers on one side and the community of end users on the other side. So it's really like having access, but also essentially bringing both together. Before that, I worked with a number of global tech companies, essentially around the world. For example, I was the chief technologist for DXC Services, which is formerly Hewlett Packard Enterprise Services. I was focused on data and analytics for the Asia region, and I did a lot of, say, technology strategy work on that back then. Earlier, I worked with Microsoft, both in Singapore and in Redmond. And in Singapore, what we did is to set up like the first team that really drives or kickstarted the analytics on the cloud business. That was like way back 2013, 2014. But that's essentially what was the ground, laying the groundwork for AI on the cloud that we have right now. I spent some time with IBM in the business analytics COE in Shanghai in China. And essentially, I got all my initial grounding and the knowledge and also the passion for data and analytics during my formative years, if you will, with SAS Institute, both in Europe and in the Asia-Pacific region where I'm based since 2007 here in Singapore.
I know towards the end of last year, you worked on the predictions with some of our other analysts, mm-hmm. and specifically on the AI predictions. So mm-hmm. can you let us know, you know, what do you think is in store for us, for our community around AI this year and beyond?
Sure. So we looked at the top five forces that we believe will drive the tech market dynamics in 2024. And my perspective is around AI legislation and breaches of AI legislation. Now, what we have now is that if possible, AI legislation is essentially just on the verge of becoming reality. However, the oversight structures of actually, say, enforcing these rules, they are currently not in place for either of the initiatives that we're seeing globally. Those will take time to build. And that gives us a bit of a gray area, unfortunately, because I would see that breaches of legislation will occur in 2024, but because of that structure not being in place, they will go largely unpunished from a legal perspective. Now, it's important to remember legal action is one thing, but there's the potential damage to your brand, to your reputation if your AI goes wrong, right?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I know that AI regulation is an area that you're particularly interested in. So where do you think we are at that right now for AI legislation? And I know you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but why is it becoming so important?
What we see in 2023 and 2024 is now that we have key legislative initiatives that changing from voluntary to legally enforceable rules, right? The European Union's Artificial Intelligence Act is a prime example. It's probably the leading AI legislation at the moment. The parliament has adopted this in June last year, in June 2023. But crucially, it's now expected to come into effect mid-2024, which make it globally the first AI legislation that's actually in power. In the US, it's a very similar thing. At the end of 2023, we saw Joe Biden's executive order on AI, which it's the same thing. It directs a shift from voluntary to enforceable rules. UK and China doing the same, Singapore also. And it's a coordinated global approach, right? We have this G7 Hiroshima AI process, which is a key forum for discussion and collaboration, which started last year. And we have the World Economic Forum in Davos, which is where Singapore launched the framework like 5 years ago. And as we speak at this event, there's a lot of discussion going on driven by Singapore to actually renew and update those legislations and those regulations. So that means, yes, you have a lot of legislation that you need to consider for if you operate globally. But luckily, most of them will be along the same lines. It will follow the same principles. So that makes your approach essentially, in a way, a bit easier, a bit more concise, because you can focus on risk management, which is the approach that they're taking. And GDPR is a really good example, because it's, I think, and it's really, that's the path I think AI legislation will take as well. It was driven by the European Union. It was initially seen as, okay, this concerns only the folks in Europe, only companies in Europe. But gradually, over time, essentially became a worldwide phenomenon, a worldwide drive to establish very similar guidelines in all of the countries.
So last year, generative AI was all over the news, and it seemed if you weren't talking about generative AI in your solution offering, or you know something, or in your shareholder meetings, you know, you weren't relevant. Now, do you see this trend continuing this year, 2024 and beyond?
This is going to be the year where we see the first, say, enterprise level adoptions of generative AI in particular. And it will be in strictly defined and limited use cases, and I see two major ones there. The first one is, I say, probably the most general cases is around personal productivity. Essentially, we're talking about, like I said, a fully integrated personal assistant to accelerate and declutter what I'm doing in my day-to-day activities, right? This is Microsoft Copilot. This is what it does for Office 365 users. The problem with that is the productivity increase for the individual can be quite significant, right? Because I don't have to summarize documents anymore and things like that. But it's very difficult to measure that enterprise impact. So that's the challenge with that approach. I think there are more impactful use cases and actually use cases that can drive a measurable outcome to the business. And these are around enterprise knowledge management and document management. And that's one use case that I see really coming to the forefront in 2024. It's essentially making accessible such knowledge, such data through, say, a cognitive search and semantic answering, essentially a chatbot that actually works on all the knowledge of your company.
You know, cloud has had a huge impact in digital transformation. And do you see generative AI having a similar sort of impact on digital transformation? What do you think its role is going to be in that?
Well, cloud was really the big bang for digital transformation, right? And AI is building on that, because it's pretty hard to imagine any AI, generative AI of the current scale that we see today without the cloud. But from a DX perspective, if you look at it end to end, you can imagine as AI essentially being the ultimate step, or the icing on the cake, if you will. But at the beginning of any DX is the shifting of data to digital. That's where you digitize all your data assets that you have. Then you do that with digitizing and crucially, like, improving the processes that you have for digital. Once you've done that, hopefully your organization can reap the benefits of increased efficiencies, lower costs in some of the exercises. And that gives you then the time to look at how you can actually change the way that the organization operates. And that's where I see AI coming in. You take full advantage of cloud data and can add up AI essentially as the icing on the cake. But it's at the end of that chain, right? You have to do your homework first with cloud and data. Let me give you an example from oil and gas industry, and that ties in with the example that I mentioned earlier about knowledge management, because that's exactly what that company did here in Southeast Asia. It's looking into ways of how to make technical documentation easier available for leveraging by their staff. Now, again, this can be decades of technical documentation in particular for offshore, right? You can see an immediate value in an offshore environment where the amount of interaction is limited. So you would have to react on the spot. You have to access to that information in a very immediate and natural way. And that's where this approach comes in. To essentially try to create a chat interface to allow the staff to interact and engage with that wealth of technical information that they have, right? That's the semantic Q&A that you have over that data from a technology perspective. And that's something that I can really see drives the benefits around speeding up the process and the activities that these people do, in particular in these remote locations. It will also increase the health and safety, because you may be able to do something that might be life-saving much faster than if you had to go like through a manual documentation.
Okay, so then that kind of brings me to the next one. So you see that's the next step, but then in order to get to that step, you know, you mentioned having all your data, digitizing everything, but is that where you think organizations need to start then?
It's very crucial to understand from an AI perspective where the risks actually come from. I want to illustrate that a bit. Let me give you an example, and I'm going to use Microsoft's Copilot example. So first, it has a somewhat lower risk because you do it internally for an internal audience. You're doing it on your internal only data, so on your own data. So that limits the risk exposure a little bit because it stays largely within the organization. But the thing is, from the model perspective, there's something really important to understand how these AI models are made available commercially or otherwise. Each of these models, whether it's OpenAI or Microsoft or Google or others, has a number of mitigation layers wrapped around it. These are like safety nets, right? They are attempting to guard the user from the most serious problems that AI has, like hallucination, unlawful, illegal uses, etc. So, say, using Microsoft as an example, they have four mitigation layers. The first one, the innermost one, is really tied around the model, around the mathematical algorithm. So that's the mathematical layer. The next one, the second innermost one, is a safety system that implements certain rules and guardrails for the model's use. This is, for example, limiting the length and depth of a session you can have for that model. Third layer, you can call this grounding, because an AI model will have a topic that it's supposed to be addressing, right? And that grounding layer is something that restricts that AI model to stay within the boundaries, say its area of competence that's set by the use case. So if you have a generative AI that will help you with your procurement documents, right? This layer actually prevents it from entertaining prompts that concern the weather or political news or the company stock price, because it's outside what its job is, right? It clearly keeps it grounded on the job, which is procurement. The fourth layer and the last layer is the UX. That's how Gen AI is served to the user. So in the example of Copilot, that's essentially the interface that's coming with Microsoft 365. You use it in all your Office applications. And each of these layers adds a layer to reduce the risk of the AI going off rails. All right, so we have four such layers. Crucially, it's that if you buy commercial, if you leverage commercial AI tool or an API, for example, in the Microsoft case, the first two layers of mitigation are baked in. The thing is, now, if you build generative AI applications yourself, and you use, say, an API on an AI tool to do that, you would have to build the other two layers yourself, which is the grounding layer, right, that essentially keeps the model focused on topic, and the layer of how it's actually served out to your users and what they're allowed to do with it. So that's an added risk. So if you buy something, say, like Copilot is something like an off-the-shelf generative AI offering, right? The beauty of that is that you get all these four mitigation layers already packaged for you. So yes, you have to pay for that, but it's also significantly lesser risk.
What is it you would like, the people who are watching this today, to take away from this conversation?
You must look into technology risk as a serious practice, as a serious domain. That risk management, that technology governance must also happen on a corporate level. It's not an IT topic. It's not a departmental responsibility, but it has to be elevated to corporate risk management. And that's, I think, is crucial with AI more than with any other technology that we have seen over the past couple of years.
Thanks very much, Shaheen. And for everyone who's watching today, please let us know what you think, and feel free to reach out to us on the information you see on the screen if you have any questions you would like Ahim to answer.